on its calendar today, one of which will be submitted with oral argument. The other five cases will be submitted without oral argument, solely on the briefs. As everyone who's involved in this argument knows, we're doing this by WebEx through the internet. Each judge is in his or her own separate location. Each attorney is in a separate location. And we're relying on video conferencing software. And so far, it seems to be working well. So the first case on today's calendar is State versus Michael James Boss, number A19-1691. Counsel for appellant, Ms. Olson, you may begin whenever you're ready. And I think, can you see the numbers on the timer clock sufficiently?
I can, Your Honor.
Okay, very good. You may proceed.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Michelle Olson, and I am representing the appellant in this matter. An action or omission or word is required for the essential elements in this matter. For a conviction, it is not just merely that Mr. Boss has done something or hasn't done something, but also the actions had to have occurred. In this case, the district court has made the 260C 0.425 subdivision one broader than what should be, how it should be construed, and has made it basically any action, any omission, or any word that is ever implied towards a child could now convict someone of this statute. Specifically in regards to this action, the respondent has deemed only two parts of the 16 enumerated grounds for this case to be either that the child was a runaway or that the environment that Mr. Boss would have put the child in was injurious or dangerous. In this action, neither the evidence, in either subdivision, the evidence is not sufficient for this case, as well as the judge has misinterpreted the law. Specifically regarding the runaway statute, a runaway is defined as an unmarried person, or an unmarried child, excuse me, under the age of 18 years who is absent from the home of a parent or other lawful placement without the consent of the parent, guardian, or lawful custodian. Specifically, to be a runaway, the child had to run away. It's not merely that the child could have been a runaway or may have been a runaway. The fact that Mr. Boss had merely sent a note to her is not enough under the statute.
Counsel, why can't the statute be interpreted as the district court interpreted it to as the note encouraging her to run away? The definition of runaway is rather broad, and the note encourages her to meet him, appellant, around midnight or after midnight by herself, and this is at the time a 10-year-old girl, and says the note's only for her. So in looking at the note, it appears that he's basically telling her to meet him without telling anyone else what she's doing. And that, you know, would appear to encourage her to be absent from her home without the consent of her parent, guardian, or lawful custodian.
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree. The statute, while the runaway definition is broad, the statute isn't broad. This is similar to 260B.425, which has actually been discussed under the law. And in those cases, there had been an actual requirement that the actions occurred. Specifically, and I want to make sure that I'm citing the case correctly for you, Your Honor, is State v. Lentz, which is an unpublished case. It's A06723. It's a 2007 case, Westlaw number 2102437. The reason why the appellant in that matter had been convicted of contributing to the needs of or contributing to the delinquency of a minor was because the minor did the action. It doesn't require that the child be convicted or a conviction or adjudication occur, but it does require that actions have taken place. Otherwise,
it's your position that in terms of a runaway, the statute would only apply if the child had actually run away?
Yes, because that is what the definition says. The definition doesn't say may be absent or could be absent. It is absent. She actually would have had to left the home without the consent. Further, the note does not say don't get consent from the guardian at all. It says it's for her eyes only, but that does not mean that you can make an inference or that an inference should be made that he's saying don't tell anybody or that no one should be aware of the situation. In fact, throughout the facts of this case, he was known to the aunt. The aunt allowed her several times to stay in the home, had no problem, no safety. The aunt actually said that. And the officer found no issues with the home itself. So truly,
why would he say for AG only three times if he didn't intend her to keep it to herself?
Well, the note to herself, Your Honor, yes. Not this meeting. There isn't an implication, actually, that is what is there. That's what the respondent in the district court has implied, but that isn't actually what is within the note itself.
Considering she's a 10-year-old child?
I guess if you consider her to be a 10-year-old child, the note also says if you want to. I mean, it is contingent. It is a conditional note. So again, we are broadening a criminal statute, which goes directly against the tradition of what we do with criminal statutes, which is that it's narrowly construed to give basically the best opportunity for the defendant. And if this court prior applied a stricter view under the delinquency statute, these statutes are nearly identical. They have the same language. The only real difference is one is contributing to the delinquency and one is contributing to the needs or protection. But if you look within 260C, contributing to delinquency could, in fact, cause you to be criminally punished under this statute itself. Because under the enumerated law, if you are helping the child within a crime or exposing the child to a crime, which would be contributing to the delinquency, you could be charged with this. Really, what this will come down to is if this court was to adopt the district court's position, any person who asks a child to do anything and the child does not mention it to a parent could now be criminally liable. Specifically, in an instance of my boss, Mr. Burkholz, has children, if his neighbor said, come over and hang out at my pool, he doesn't ask permission of the parent, the children come over, this would be the same situation. Because he didn't ask, the child is now deemed a runaway. Whether the person did it or not, whether the child did it or not, that would be deemed a runaway under the definition that the respondent and the district court has applied. And that is not the definition of a runaway. Similarly to a dangerous and injurious situation.
So when does a child become a runaway under your hypothetical?
How long does
the child have to be absent from the home without the parent's consent?
Technically, there is no time requirement, but it's once the child is absent and did not get the consent of the parent. But the child still has to be absent.
Under your hypothetical, if the person, someone in the neighborhood asked the child to come over to their house and come to their swimming pool, and the child actually did that and didn't ask the parents, would that fit the definition of a runaway?
Technically, under the construction of what the respondent wants, yes. I believe that the statute allows for a little more leeway, that the child has to be there long enough, but frankly, it isn't in the statute. So it could be interpreted either way. However, the child does have to become absent. So under this circumstance, the child never became absent. The child never was absent. If the child became absent, then the district court could look at the actions, omissions, words of Mr. Boss and see if they were encouraging to do those things. However, without that part of this, the element, there isn't a runaway. And again, similarly to the environment, what seems to be implied is...
Before you go on, so essentially, you're interpreting the statute, it seems, as if it said any person who successfully encourages, causes, or contributes to the need for protection or services. So, am I right in saying that?
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor. Again, 260B has been interpreted that actions need to occur. It doesn't have to be successful. However, the action, there has to be a prerequisite event that has caused this. So
it caused what?
Caused the child to be in need of protection or services, has become a runaway. It has to, the event, one of the 16 enumerated grounds would have had to have occurred. That is what I'm talking about. It would have to trigger that event, and then you would look to see if these actions happened. That is similar.
You would agree that there does not need to be a finding or adjudication by the district court that a child is CHIPS, simply that the underlying facts that would be necessary for such a finding are present. Is that your position?
That is my position, exactly, Your Honor. It would be exactly like the decision in State v. Lentz. So if the underlying facts of a runaway occurred, then you would look to see if the actions, words, or omissions of the person created the potential triggering event.
What if the state had charged, hypothetical, what if the state had charged your client with attempt to contribute to the need for protection or services under these facts?
I guess under an attempt, that would be more like a conspiracy, so you'd have to have more of an overt action that would lead to this. However, that is not what he had been charged with. So I guess in that situation, if they had charged it, we would have a different scenario. Also, different evidence may have been presented towards the attempt. But since that didn't happen here, we have to go under what has been, I guess, previously decided. The environment portion is also similar.
Before you go on, I'd like to ask one more question.
Of course.
And that is, so the district court's reasoning, the district court perceives some differences between those three verbs, encourages, causes, or contributes, and essentially reasoned, I'm looking at paragraph 7 of the, I think it's the conclusions of law, district court's reasoning, and I'm paraphrasing, is that to cause or to contribute implies that the need for protection or services is present. Contribute, however, does not necessarily imply that the situation is present. And so therefore, you know, if it were interpreted as you wish, it would be redundant. It would be because under your interpretation of the statute, what he did in this case, you know, if the child did become a runaway or did become the child described in the other paragraph, then he would have certainly caused or contributed. And so the word encourage would be superfluous. What is your response to that part of the district court's reasoning?
Your Honor, I would disagree with the district court that somehow encourage would become superfluous if we defined it as was defined in State v. Lentz and as the appellant is asking it to be defined. The issue we have is that if we go with the district court's ruling, this is broadening the statute into circumstances where the legislator probably never intended. And criminal statutes are very specific that they need to be narrowly construed towards the benefit of the defendant. Specifically, if we go under that, the whole affirmative defense that you have under 260C then becomes superfluous, because the what we have in this specific instance is that it was the children's conduct or the child's conduct. Subdivision 6 and subdivision subdivision 9 and subdivision 13, the two that the respondent has gone under, are specifically action-related conduct. So under that, the conduct of the child needs to happen. If you see the difference between maybe subdivision 6, parent 1, which is that the child is abandoned, there's no action there for the child to have commenced. If the child became abandoned because of the parent, that could be a criminal action. or if a teacher took a child from somewhere and abandoned the child, and that, again, the child didn't do anything. But in under these two specific grounds, you need the conduct of the child to happen. I mean,
what conduct do you need for the environment being such that it's injurious or dangerous to the child? Why does there need to be some conduct by the child there? I guess I understand your argument, you know, otherwise, but I'm having trouble understanding how it would relate with regard to the environment. I mean, it's not necessarily the child's doing.
I understand, Your Honor. I guess how the statute is read is that the child's conduct or the environment that the child is in would be injurious or dangerous. In this specific instance, there is nowhere that the... I see that my time is up. May I finish the question?
Yes, please finish your answer to Judge Cochran's question.
Because the environment wasn't injurious or dangerous under the facts, I understand that a meeting was maybe taking place, but the district court was specifically saying that the meeting taking place is enough to be considered injurious or dangerous, but there is no actual fact that this would have happened, that there was any intention. The focus more was on Mr. Boss's actions. And while they may not be, I guess, normalized, they aren't criminal in nature. I would also request, since I didn't get to, for a 5-minute rebuttal after the respondent.
That's automatic.
Okay.
That's part of our schedule. You will have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Mr. Kalk, on behalf of the state.
Thank you, Your Honors. Ms. Olson, may it please the court. My name is Dan Kalk. I represent the respondent in this matter, the state of Minnesota. Just touch on a few things. The first thing I did want to talk a little bit about is the standard of review. As I noted in my, or I should say rather, the state's brief, we talked a little bit about the Horst case that specifically, I believe, is State v. Horst. It's a few years old. It's a sort of Supreme Court case that talked about kind of that standard of review for circumstantial evidence versus direct evidence, because I think that there might be a little bit of a mixture here. The state's position is that this is all direct evidence, and so so that certain standard would apply. That is that Horst case was a murder for hire case. The court indicated that the testimony of a co-conspirator, specifically this co-conspirator said, or testified rather, that the defendant had made comments to him about the murder, something about, you know, we can do this. How many rounds did you put in him? And the court held that the words of the appellant essentially was direct evidence. And so it's my position that we have even more direct evidence in this particular case, because we have in his own hand the words of the defendant in that letter, who was very clearly encouraging this 10-year-old to leave her home in extremely concerning circumstances.
Mr. Kalk, isn't the issue, it seems to me the primary issue is the meaning of the statute and whether the state must prove that she was a runaway as opposed to simply that the defendant wanted her to become a runaway and tried to encourage her to do so, or similarly with the other paragraph, paragraph 9. Isn't that the main issue?
It is, Your Honor. Thank you. And I just wanted to touch on that one thing, but I will get to that. Yes. Under 260C425, it does state clearly that when it talks about what constitutes the crime itself, is any person who by act, word, or omission encourages and to the need for child protection and services. And as a court is obviously aware, there are 16 different factual scenarios in which a person could be charged under that particular case. And obviously in this case we have two, and it really does stem on runaway, and the definition of runaway does indicate that it is a we only went over the definition, but it's our position that go ahead.
Counsel, as you know, as appellant pointed out, as Ms. Olson pointed out, the criminal statutes are to be narrowly construed, and in the definition of child in need of protection or services, it says a child in need of protection or services means a child who is in need of protection or services because the child, and then 13 it says, is a runaway. Why shouldn't we interpret the statute narrowly to apply only where the child has run away or the child is in an injurious or dangerous environment?
The reason that I suggest you not interpret it that way is that it really does eliminate or render superfluous that word encourages. You think of a scenario in which essentially an individual were to pull up to a child on the street riding their bike. And I know it's a little bit cliche, but it's like, you know, I have candy. Do you want to come in? I know your parents and that sort of thing. So under that, the person would not be criminally liable unless and until that child actually jumped in the car. And I think that that is specifically the type of behavior that the legislator sought to really eliminate, because we are dealing with children here, and that encouragement, that enticement to get them away is itself that crime. And I know that brief defined encourage to give courage, to embolden, to raise confidence. And I think it's clear in that letter, and I know Your Honor did point out some of the wording on there, which I think clearly leads to the expectation that the child would be a runaway. There's nothing in here that would indicate that she was supposed to tell her guardian. In fact, quite the opposite. It says several times that this is for your eyes only. If you're not AG, turn back now. Take a walk down Central Street by yourself.
Judge Johnson's question, whether, you know, should this have been charged as an attempted crime or as the actual crime itself?
An actual crime itself, Your Honor, and thank you for the question. That is something that we did look at. However, I think if we were to have charged it under attempt, going strictly by what that statute says, we would have had to have essentially proven that he attempted to encourage. And I don't know, I think that would have been a more difficult threshold to really prove. I mean, because the encouraging usually in the normal circumstances is, you know, some sort of words, of course, or action. And it also talks about omission. And omission is interesting in that context, too, because what's omitted is anything about telling a 10-year-old to advise their guardian before going out after midnight in, I believe, December or January.
So, Mr. Clark, is it significant that the statute in Subdivision 1A uses the word the article the before need, you know, contributes to the need for protection or services? Does that, to me, that seems to imply that there is an existing need. A need has already been identified, and the word the refers to the need. Does that suggest that the legislature intended that the state must prove an actual need for protection or services?
I apologize. I don't know that I'm 100% following.
Well, you may not. I have the statute in front of me. You may not, but I'll read it. I'll read the whole sentence to you. The 0.425 subdivision 1A, any person who by act, word, or omission encourages, causes, or contributes to the need for protection or services is guilty of a gross misdemeanor. So I'm looking specifically at the word the before the word need. And to me, that seems to imply that a need must exist.
I see what you're saying, Your Honor. However, I guess the way that I would, I don't know that I would, I guess I would respectfully disagree is what I'm trying to say with that, the needing to be pre-existing, if that makes sense. I think that the encouragement can be the need. The encouragement can create that need in this particular context. So I don't know that the need already...
Another question having, so we have three verbs there, encourages, causes, or contributes to. If we remove the words causes or contributes to, and so let's imagine the statute said simply any person who encourages the need for protection of or services is guilty of a gross misdemeanor. What would that sentence mean? How would one encourage the need?
Encourage the need for protection and services? Let me
explain myself a little bit before I ask you to answer, because, I mean, I think most of us, when we think of the word encourage, if a person is encouraging, so usually they're encouraging another person. The object of the encouraging is another person, and perhaps they're encouraging them to do something else, but it's a little bit odd in this situation, in my opinion, to be encouraging this not a person, but rather the verb, the object of encourage is need, the need for protection or services. It's a thing, and it's an intangible thing, not a person. But I don't know. Can you help me? Can you, in my hypothetical where causes or contributes is not there, can you help me understand what that sentence would mean?
Well, I guess.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think I know what you're talking about. So essentially, in encouraging a need and how that essentially is criminalized. And I think, and I may be wrong here, but I think, you know, going back to the hypothetical we were talking before about a situation where a neighbor just says, "Hey, come on over." Is that criminal? No, but I think when you're looking at the runaway statute not having that a time frame in which the child needs to be absent, because I think any timeline would be arbitrary, because even if you say 10 minutes, well, 11 minutes is not, but 9 is. But I think what it comes down to is that prosecutorial discretion about whether or not is this something that, you know, that encouragement for that child, does that create the need for protection or service?
Okay. And am I correct in understanding your position? It's your position that Mr. Boss encouraged, not that he caused or contributed. Is that correct?
Correct. Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. I apologize for the somewhat confusing question.
No, that's fine. I appreciate that, and it did allow me to get make a couple of points.
Mr. Block, I have a question for you before your time runs out here. Can you respond to appellant's argument about State v. Lentz in 260B.425 using similar language as 260C.425?
Yes, Your Honor. I
didn't see a cite to that in your brief, that case, so I'd like to, I'm asking.
Yeah, no, Your Honor, and I think my position would be essentially that that everything that the court would need is already in within 260C, so I don't know that looking to 260B as far as either context or is really necessary. So that's why, and I appreciate you pointing that out, because I probably should have addressed that. But I think just working strictly within 260C, that was charged and convicted under the legislature has given adequate guidance to support the convictions.
Am I correct, Mr. Calkin, understanding it's your position that the child is not a runaway, was not a runaway at any time? Is that correct?
She did not run away, Your Honor. Correct.
And similarly, the condition in paragraph 9, or the ninth ground in the statute, that condition was also not present, correct?
The child did not run away and plink herself out there. However, I think that it's a little less clear with that one, because I think that it has to take into consideration the broader context of everything that was going on. I mean, just the simple, asking her to come into an abandoned type of a building at night. Obviously, it seems he had a pretty dangerous obsession with this young lady.
So if you proved, I mean, given the evidence, let's say that it was a civil proceeding, could a district court find, based on that evidence, that the ninth ground in the statute is proven? The ninth one says the child is one whose behavior, condition, or environment is such as to be injurious or dangerous to the child or others.
Yes.
You think that was true?
I do, Your Honor.
Okay. Am I correct? I have one more question, then I'll ask other judges if they do. Am I correct also that the complaint alleges conduct on or about December 4 of 2017, if I recall correctly. So am I correct that the prosecution is based solely on the note in the stocking?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah. Thank you. Judge Cochran, do you have any further questions for Mr. Call?
I do not.
And Judge Smith, what about you?
I do not.
Okay. Well, your time has expired, Mr. Kalk. I apologize if I interrupted your concluding remarks, but...
No, Your Honor, thank you.
Okay, thank you for your argument. Ms. Olson, as we previously mentioned, you have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal. Ms. Olson, can you hear me?
I can, Your Honor. The law clerk looked like she was switching the timer, so I didn't want to see her before she switched it.
You're correct. I wasn't looking at the correct part of the screen. Yeah. Thank you. We'll wait for that.
The challenges of WebEx oral arguments.
I'm more than happy to take 15 minutes, but I don't think you'd want to sit here for that. So. Your Honors, I in hearing respondents' arguments, I think the clear thing is that the respondent didn't like the behavior of Mr. Boss. That is the only reason why we're here today. The respondent equates Mr. Boss's behaviors towards a stranger coming up to a child and trying to give candy. That actually isn't what this statute is for. The plain meaning of the words are there. Encouraging is still within its plain meaning by appellant's definition. The issue is the need. There needs to be something there to adjudicate someone of the crime. There needs to be the ground there insufficient. In this case, there isn't that.
Do you agree that encouragement usually happens before an act? In other words, I might encourage you to go to law school or encourage my children to get outside and enjoy the great outdoors. So, in your reading of the statute, can the encouragement happen before the need for protection arises?
Yes, Your Honor. However, the need needs to happen.
So if the child had run away, you wouldn't be making the same argument?
I think there could be different arguments to be made, but yes, I would not be making the same argument. The biggest issue we have here is a runaway or the environment has to have occurred. It has to be dangerous or injurious. She, AG, never went, never did anything. What we're having here is this is becoming a thought crime because Mr. Boss thought of something and the county didn't like it, the respondent didn't like it, therefore we will charge this out. The fact that respondent said it's under the prosecutorial discretion whether to charge the crime or not, frankly, isn't relevant in these situations. It's whether, beyond a reasonable doubt, that Mr. Boss or any person did the action, the omission, the word, any what it's under to encourage the person, and the need has now or protection has been met. In this case, we couldn't do that. You couldn't adjudicate because the grounds weren't there. If this were under a civil or a juvenile statute, we couldn't meet those needs and because they aren't there. Going into the circumstantial part of this, even if the court were to deem the statutory interpretation of the district court or the respondent, the evidence isn't there. This is completely circumstantial. The respondent is claiming there's direct evidence because of statements. However, the statements made do not say, I wanted to get her alone. I wanted her to run away. They're not like that, which is state v. Horst is more along those lines of, I'm going to tell you how many bullets. That is, I'm telling you about the action. In this case, the emails that were implied were, when she gets older, I want to do something. If she wanted to do this, I would do that. That puts a condition upon this that is very different. Again, I think the circumstances here are the words that Mr. Boss used were not the words that the respondent liked. They were afraid for the child. Whether the child needed that fear of the state is really what is at question here. And because this is all circumstantial evidence, that higher scrutiny does need to be applied. And in this case, the district court didn't actually find any evidence that the place that the child was in was dangerous or injurious, that she became a runaway, just that
what
she
about the court finding that that she testified, the child testified credibly that the note made her feel scared that appellant would do something to her. Does that put her in an environment that's injurious or dangerous?
No, Your Honor. Again, the environment itself has to be injurious or dangerous, not that the child felt scared. The child doesn't live in the home. The child was not going to. And in fact, the note said, only if you want to do this. It actually gave the child the right to decide whether she wanted to do something or not. That means that really the encouragement was, I want to meet you. That's what this boils down to. I want to meet you. I want to do that. The intention for Mr. Boss, as he testified to, was that he wanted to meet because they were leaving. This child was also very much wanted part of their family. He wanted to adopt the child. That was what he was looking at. So we are creating intentions here that just aren't true.
Judge Cochran, do you have any additional questions?
No, I do not. Thank you.
Judge Smith?
I do not.
Nor do I. It appears your time has expired. Thank you to both counsel for your arguments. Thank you for appearing by WebEx. I think it worked well for all of us. The case is submitted, and the court will now be in recess. And that means that each of us can, I think, click on the red X or circle at the bottom of our screens and leave the video conference meeting. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.